Hi, and welcome to another special video episode of our podcast, D23 Inside Disney. I'm Sherry from Oh My Disney.
I'm Jeffrey from D23.
And I'm Candace from Radio Disney.
The beautiful moving film Howard is now streaming on Disney Plus. It tells the story of legendary lyricist and Disney legend Howard Ashman, who for Disney penned the unforgettable lyrics to songs from The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, and Aladdin.
And today we have with us an incredible roster of guests, Disney legends Jodie Benson, Alan Menken, and Paige O'Hara, Howard Ashman's sister Sarah Gillespie, Howard's partner Bill Lauck, and Howard director Don Hahn.
Welcome to the show, everyone.
Hi, guys.
Woo-hoo. Hi, everybody.
Hi. Great to be here.
All right, Alan, we'd be remiss if we did not congratulate you on your new LEGOT status, having received the Disney Legend, Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony Awards.
I also have the Razzie for Worst Song of the Year from Newsies.
We had our Twitter exchange, and I feel like because the Razzie was for Newsies, you really get the last laugh on this one. So congratulations.
Right. They actually have a physical Razzie award, and I said, I just found that out recently. I said, send it to me. I received it in the mail. It's got these little raspberries. I put it in the cake. Instantly, half of it fell apart. Which I
sounds
think is
about
totally,
right.
Totally appropriate.
Fitting.
Well, what was it like for each of you to kind of see yourselves transported back to the 70s, 80s, and early 90s?
I got to score the movie, and I felt a responsibility to try to give some sort of musical context. So I was sort of within it and working on it. I was just blown away emotionally by it every time I went near it. It's just what Don did is so wonderful and brilliant. And who knew? I mean, we knew each other. I knew you as a producer. He was a producer on Beauty, and we did Hunchback for a while together.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was a film, you know, also literally, you know, a film director, and it was so good.
I think, you know, Don was very kind and shared shared stuff as he was finding it, and shared roughs of, I don't know if they're called roughs when they're in films, but rushes, maybe, whatever, of the film as he was working on it. And what would happen is he would find things that, you know, there was stuff that I knew and stuff that he had, you know, come to our various homes and gone through stuff. So a lot of it were things I knew. And then with the recordings especially, he would find things that I didn't know. And the one thing he found that it still kills me. I don't know quite where Don found it, but there is an audio recording of Howard talking to
Ron and John.
John Musker and Ron Clements.
Ron Clements, yes.
Ron Clements, who were the directors of Mermaid. But this was when he was working on Beauty. And Howard was very ill. And I hadn't heard him sound like that since he died. That's not the voice I want to remember. It's not the voice I remember. It's not the Howard it's a Howard I try not to remember. It was difficult, obviously. And it was, I just remember first thing in the morning, turning that on and listening to that and watching that and just, it's a combination of gratitude for hearing it. And as I say, it still moves me and it hurts to hear it. It hurts to hear him sound like that. But such a kind of treasure that Don found.
Yeah, it was in the Library of Congress, and it shouldn't exist because it was from an old answering machine that's meant to record incoming messages, not meant to record conversations. And it was in a box in the back of the Library of Congress, and I started listening to it, and I thought, this is Howard. And it was on the day that we recorded Angela Lansbury. And so he's telling the directors of Aladdin and Little Mermaid how that went. And I just thought, this shouldn't exist. And yet I'm listening to it. And it was such an amazing thing to find.
What Don did throughout the film is he touched on very significant moments in Howard's life. And most of us, all of us here, were shared in all of that. So for me to watch it, it was this mixed bag of real exhilaration and happiness and devastation. And so it's every time I see the film, and I've seen it many, many times now, I get taken on that journey. And it kind of rattles around in my head for a few days. So I'm not very good at ascertaining how a unfamiliar viewer, you know, the impact on somebody who has never heard of Howard. So I have to listen to others in how they perceive this movie. And it's all been really good.
You know, watching when Don sent the Howard documentary before it was finished, just to kind of take a look at it, I started watching it and I had to turn it off. So I was sitting by myself and I just couldn't really go there. I think at that time, whatever I was in my head and in my heart, I wasn't really ready to walk that journey. So I grabbed my husband, Ray, and tried again the next night after the kids were, I think, occupied doing something. So I said, can you sit with me? This is, you know, going to be a journey, and I want to go on it. And now I think I'm ready to go on it. So just as Bill shared, there were so many joys and wonderful, wonderful surprises, especially photos from Smile that I had never seen before. And that was a great, great fond memory to go back through those 2.5-4 years of the Smile journey. And then taking us on the road through The Little Mermaid. So there was a lot of joy, but tremendous sadness, but important. It was a really important piece to get through. And now that I've seen it several times, I'm so grateful. You know, that's the first word that comes to my mind. And I say this to everybody when I sing Part of Your World every week for 34 years, I guess, I've been singing this song now. And I never get tired of singing it. And even in the middle of this pandemic, I sing to the camera every day for various things. And the great thing about Howard and Alan's music is that it is a sense memory. So I go back to the studio to the exact day with Howard standing to my left and Alan and all the wonderful people, and I get to have this intimate moment for 3 minutes and 17 seconds that I'm singing a song and I'm sharing a song, but quite selfishly, I am going back in time. So every time Alan's first note hits, I get to have this magical journey back all those decades ago and sing this beautiful song where I am literally imitating Howard. He's Ariel, and I just jumped on that ride with him. And I loved line readings. We didn't need to do it 50 times. I just needed to do it once. I just needed to do it the way that Howard did it. And that worked for me. And it was such a gift and such a blessing to have him standing right next to me. So it's a beautiful journey, and having this film is this treasure. I feel like it's this wonderful, wonderful gift that we all get to share together here on the screen, but around the world. And I'm really excited for people to join in on this journey of Howard's life.
Paige, what was it like to go back and revisit those days?
Oh my gosh, Michael and I, when we watched it, we went through so many emotions. I mean, the one moment we were cracking up laughing at Howard and how funny he was. And the next minute you're crying and you're going through all of these other emotions because of having lived some of them with him. But the journey, what I love about the film so much is that you get to see all the aspects of the man. Not just you see the genius, you see the humor, the incredible intelligence, but you also see the sympathetic, caring, kind person that he was as well. I love the fact that I have friends that have kids that are saying, I want to know this Howard. I want to see this movie. And they've watched the movie. And he's got a whole new slew of fans now, of young people that are now discovering the genius of Howard Ashman and Alan Menken. And I'm talking like little kids, you know, that just, it's amazing to see the multiple generations of people who idolize both you, Alan, and Howard. And I love the fact that I'm introducing it to some of my friends' children and grandchildren right now. I'm loving that. So we're watching the movie a lot.
When I watch it, there's layers with each scene of things that I know beyond what's there.
Right.
And so many of them, you know, when I think about Howard's vocal thing, I remember, exactly the moment where it started. And actually, Don, believe it or not, has to do with you. You had a laryngitis, and Howard was afraid he had caught your laryngitis.
Yep.
And you know, obviously it's a neuropathy, it has nothing to do with that, but on every scene, on every level, there's those things that are unseen. I know in the scene where Jody, I wasn't there. I was doing Judy Kravitz in Philadelphia. That was Robbie Merkin who was sitting. But I remember there were tensions behind the scenes. There were palpable tensions where Howard was really yet to really grab the reins of producing these sessions. Mm-hmm. And he was on the verge of saying, I need to control this. Yeah. And a lot of that happened in the work with you and how that was dealt with. He wanted to make sure he got to deal with you as an actress, not just worry about what the mic is and what the reverb is and all that. And I would hear about that, you know, constantly. But every scene has it. There's things behind the scenes that are just, they'll keep coming bubbling back as I watch it.
Jody, you sort of touched on this when you talked about the smile images, but for all of you, you all knew Howard very well. Was there something either in watching the movie or in putting it together that you learned that surprised you that you didn't know?
I think some of the aspects of his childhood I had heard about, but really especially moving to me, Sarah, was all of your narration. That I just was holding on to that, for you to know him as a little boy. Because I think for myself and for Paige, we got to experience Howard's little boy coming out creatively through work as he's, you know, pulling everything out of us that he wants to be excellent. But I was so excited and so moved by hearing those specific details about his childhood that can only come from you. And so I kind of pushed rewind on those several times because I wanted to grab all those moments and be able to visualize it. And I think it just empowered even more of who he was in the moments that I experienced him. It gave it more vitality, I think, and just more that essence of, oh my gosh, this was what was behind those moments. Because, like, you know, in Smile, remember, guys, it was crazy. It was horrible. There was, you know, fighting and there was chaos and all this. But ultimately, I always knew that Howard's goal was sheer excellence. That's all he wanted. He wanted the best. He wanted it to be the best that it could be, bottom line. And you either jump on that train or you get the heck off. You know, just get on board with him because he knows what he's talking about. I so loved you giving me, personally, I got to get that childhood piece, and boy, that just spelled it out for me. It just like completed it for me. It was really special.
That it is to the excellence, which was that when we were kids, Howard would put on shows in the backyard, as I'm sure many of you experienced as well. And we did Gypsy because we didn't start. It was Howard, so you didn't
of
start.
Of course you did, yeah.
Gypsy.
I mean, that is an ambitious child production.
Howard directed it, and he had to fire the Linda, I will not use her last name, Linda down the block, who could just not cut Gypsy Road striptease. Howard fired her. Linda's mother gave it to Howard, like, really let him have it. He didn't fire her daughter. And Howard did Let Me Entertain You, the strip, with like, my mom talked about this, a script, he made a scrim out of a sheet, right, with backlighting, because it was Howard, and did the scrim, undoing, Let Me Entertain You, taking, unwrapping from towels, you know, dropping. And, but that's the excellence. He had to fire Linda. She just wasn't good enough. And it was clear.
Sarah, through your stories.
I love that story.
That story and the story we hear in the film, we got a real sense of Howard as a kid and as a brother. How did your relationship grow as you grew into adults?
He was always my mentor, and basically Howard told me what to do, and I listened because he did tend to know better. I moved to New York because Howard did not want me staying in Baltimore and decided I should move to New York. My best friend, still my best friend, Nancy Parent, who's in the film, Howard decreed when they met that she would be my best friend. He told me I would love her, and I do indeed, but he made that happen. Howard, it was kind of inevitable that he had Bill and myself become responsible for his work after his death, and he knew we would be good partners, and I think we are. And I don't remember what the question was, but that's
I have a back of the story, and I always wonder what Howard would have thought, which is people say, oh, don't you think Howard would have been thrilled, you know, about Robin Williams playing the genie? What people don't know, and I don't know how Howard would have felt, but Robin's first wife, Valerie, and Howard were very close friends. And they went to school together. Was it Antioch? Or I can't remember.
No, Goddard.
That was Goddard. Me. Goddard.
Oh, it's Goddard. And he was a little upset because about Robin Williams and the marriage having gone on the rocks. And it was after Howard, very shortly after Howard passed away, they said, "Oh, Robin will be playing the genie." And we've never really discussed that. I always wondered how would Howard have dealt with that? Because he's a very, very loyal friend. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
Alan, you probably know better than anyone how Howard felt about improvisation. You know what Robin does with improvisation. So there may have been some comments regarding that.
Yeah, listen, the world would have been a different, yes.
It would have worked well together.
Latin changed a great deal after Howard passed. It did. It was our initial take was this wink at the Hope Crosby Road pictures, and it was very a buddy picture. And I'm sure Howard would have adjusted, because God knows, you talk about adjustment. If you look at Little Shop of Horrors, when the movie came out, had the original ending with the plant eating New York City, and we were, you know, the movie was fine up until then, and then the cards just went crashing down, and Howard was given the assignment, you know, we have the footage, we need to just take the existing footage with very little reshooting and change the ending completely. And Howard did that, I think, in a week or something like that, just completely, you know, okay, let's not, fine. Audrey lives, Seymour, you know, lives. He just turned it around because he's such a...
I don't think he said fine, though. What? I don't think he said fine. I don't remember him being very happy about it, but he did it.
Well, but he did. You know, Howard was a pro. He did what needed to be done.
Yeah.
Alan, in the doc, you said that you and Howard never left the room without a good idea and a good song. So do you remember a particularly challenging day or maybe night that led to a great song you could talk about?
Beauty and the Beast was a challenge. And I remember finding, similarly, like this long tape of us in the living room in Beacon, you know, inching our way towards Beauty. You know, as opposed to a song where I tell the story often about Be Our Guest, where I basically just tossed out some, you know, off the top of my head, dummy piece of music, which is a dummy piece. And always, you know, and then he brought back the lyric. I said, now I'll write the real music. And I could, you know, because all that music had to do was get out of the way of his lyrics, just establish a place and get out of the way. Somewhere the screen went through a lot of changes. Most of the changes were in figuring out what a musical wants to be. You know, that we had a whole initial score to Little Shop of Horrors that had nothing to do with being The Dark Side of Greece or you know, or Phil Spector rock and roll. It was very much in the style of the Corman movie. And we went there, and then, you know, people looked at us like we had five heads, and we said, and then one day he came in, he said, I got it. And from that point forward, boom, it was done. Howard was very much about the concept. And we were writing his musical. You're going to know why we're in this style of music, what that style of music is saying, why we're in that, you know, how it's informing the rest of the movie. And it was just, once he came to that, then boom, it was the process became inevitable.
It's interesting, Alan, if I can, I always thought you would answer this. I always thought Howard worked once, as you say, he had the concept. Once the concept was there, he worked very fast on the initial. And then what he liked to do was edit, was go back in and drill in and drill in and drill in.
Of course, yeah. And then in rehearsal, you know, I was heartbroken when we took out We'll Have Tomorrow. It was this beautiful ballad, act two of Little Shop, when Seymour is telling Audrey, go home, it'll all be okay. And he said, we can't have two ballads in act two. We already have Suddenly Seymour, it's going to. And he was very smart about balancing what's needed. Yeah, obviously a lot of editing.
Speaking of editing, Don, obviously you had hours and hours and hours of footage and audio that needed to be edited to make the film. Was there a scene or two that you really, really loved but just didn't have room for?
Yeah, there always is. And it's impossible to put Howard's life together in 90 minutes, but you try. I guess the thing that comes to mind, there's a gentleman named Kyle Rennick, who was Howard's producer, the managing director of the WPA Theater, which Howard had in New York. And it was kind of miraculous to me that this, you know, kid who's in his 20s right out of Indiana University moves to New York, which you could do then because it's unaffordable now, and opens a theater, which you could do then because you couldn't possibly do it now, and has all these places to workshop things. That's where Little Shop of Horrors came from and Rosewater came from. And there's a great piece of tape that Kyle had where Howard talks about the night he went to see a Tennessee Williams play, and Tennessee Williams was in the theater. Mm-hmm. And he invited Tennessee Williams out for drinks afterwards with Stewart, and they all went next door. And can you imagine that table is sitting there having drinks? And then at the end of the story, Howard says, and then I said, Mr. Williams, well, good luck on your play. And then Tennessee Williams turned to Howard and said, well, Mr. Ashman, good luck on your play. And I think that was probably the highlight of Howard's life. You know, he idolized Tennessee Williams so much. I just thought, that's, wow, what a moment that must have been. He had a very rich life.
What Don did is very similar to what Howard did. As Alan said, you know, can't have two ballads at the end in the second act. One of the reasons people always say how well done Little Shop is, that it's such a gem, that it's so concise. Part of the reason is because there isn't a spare line. It gets you in and out of the theater. It doesn't run on, and yet it gives you this emotional burst. That's kind of what the beauty of Little Shop. And I think it's also what Don did. You know, writer. There's a writing line. It sounds terrible, but that writers have. And sometimes you have to kill your children. Your very lovely pretties. You sometimes have to just say goodbye to. And I think the fact that Don kept it to 90 minutes and had to let go of some of his little beauties is, I think, is just.
You know what? Him as a filmmaker. Sarah, what you just said, all of a sudden my head just went boom. Little Shop was the last time Howard had complete artistic control of something. And you look at what a gem that is. I mean, 85 minutes. You open up the stock and amateur version of the script. You cannot find a page where there aren't those capital letters of song lyrics. It is so integrated and tight. And after that, with Smile and with Disney, of course, it was never that kind of unilateral control ever again. And God knows the, you know, the wonderful results. But what it would have been like if Howard had again had the experience of just saying, I am writing this and I'm directing this and I'm doing this exactly the way I want to do it. You know, we'll never have that, but wow.
In a good world, he would have had that power after the Disney films.
He wanted to do Big Street. Mm-hmm. And I've tried and tried, you know, I've written, but it's, you know, it's this quirky story and I'm just, we'll never know what he would have wanted to do with that. Mm-hmm. It haunts me a little bit, but that's, so be it.
Bill, I was lucky enough to watch you accept the Academy Award live for the, or at least live on television for Beauty and the Beast on Howard's
behalf. You can't be that old.
Oh, I'm not old, but thanks. That's very nice of you. It's the good ring light. You on that Academy Award stage was a huge moment in so many ways. What was that like for you?
It was a surreal opportunity. And I've said this before, but I'll say it again, that it was kind of all a blur. When you go to the Academy Awards and there's the potential that you'll have to speak, you don't think about anything that happens before that. But I was supported by many aspects surrounding that event, the Disney Company, the Academy, and most importantly, Sarah and Alan, who felt this was appropriate and the right thing to do for me to represent. So I went up on the stage kind of in a cloud, and I knew what I had written and wanted to say, and it touched on a couple things. It was primarily to just represent for Howard appropriately and in a way that he would approve of, and to speak in a way that would bring light to all of the people that were suffering through AIDS the way he did, but didn't have the exceptional circumstances that we did, the support and the environment in which he was able to produce his best work, because there are just tens of thousands of people out there that were lost in the melee of that horrible plague. And the last thing was that I wanted to represent same-sex relationships in a way that was opening that door a little more. So I was given that opportunity and really grateful for it. And I had no idea it would sort of carry on and live on in the way it has. So it was an event that I will always remember, and had no idea that it had any kind of impact other than in my own life.
Wow. Well, Paige and Jody, we see Howard working with both of you with real specificity. Sometimes getting a lot of direction, I feel like, can hinder an actor. So what was it about the way Howard worked with you that actually helped you?
Well, for me, Howard just encouraged me to let myself come through in the character. And that was hard for me, to be that vulnerable, to allow your own personality to come into a part. I always found it easier to play like the A.O. Annies and, you know, roles that I did, revivals and what have you. But Belle was different. Belle was so much like me that it was kind of intimidating and challenging. And Howard was really the one, I mean, Kirk and Gary are directors, of course, too, but Howard was the one that would pull me aside and said, don't be afraid to let yourself come through. And he talked about the character. He'd talk about the fact that she was older. She was the only princess, not a teenager. She had a warmth and a maturity about her. He says, you have that in your sound innately. Don't try and cover it up. Just let yourself come through. And that was a constant direction. And I mean, there were certain things like the new and a bit alarming, as Alan has told it when we were recording it, and he was in the hospital then at that point. And Howard was just on a phone patch, and I wasn't getting that one phrase exactly the way he wanted it. And he said, tell her to put some Streisand in it. And then, of course, new and a bit alarming, you know, it kind of came out. And, you know, there were a couple times like that. And Quiet Village, I could not get Quiet Village. And oddly enough, you're talking about the Oscars. When I sang that night, the Belle song, and I'm in the wings, I kept thinking of that session with Howard before I went on stage. Quiet Village. I want to get that out right. I want that phrase to be good. And of course, Angela Lansbury standing next to me, she's going to introduce me. That was an amazing night. But I thought of Howard a lot right before I went on stage, and it actually calmed me down. I actually felt like, okay, I'm going to do this. He's watching. I'm going to nail this. He was a very special man. more ways that I could spend an hour just talking through that, but it's we'll do that another time.
I was absolutely petrified because I'd never been behind a microphone before. I didn't know what the heck I was doing. And I knew that when I walked into work the first day, everybody was going to know that I was a fake. And it was Howard, you know, he's like, you can do this. And the greatest cheerleader. I beat myself up a lot. You don't hear a lot of it because we did a lot of whispering in the studio together, a lot of whispering behind our hands kind of thing. But I really struggled with insecurity. And he was a cheerleader. You know, he just pulled everything out of me to be able to do this. Because at one point I told him, I can't do this. I think they got the wrong girl. You know, there's a million people that can do this that know what the heck they're doing. I feel like every day I was just saying that constantly. I don't know what I'm doing and I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. He's like, you got to stop saying you're sorry because you got this, you can do this. I just need you to stop singing. I was just singing. You know, I had just come from the Lunt-Fontanne Theater with 1,500 people. I didn't know anything about the studio. And I felt like a little bit like a fraud. And it was really hard for me coming from stage, from Broadway, to sing behind a mic, you know, that can hear everything. Every time I burped, I have this problem where I kept burping and I couldn't control it. And, you know, Howard's like, it's okay, just take some water. You're gonna be fine.
I have the same problem. It's so embarrassing.
I will never watch Little Mermaid the same way again.
Oh, boy.
I've known you since 1980. I've never heard that story before.
I think there's like a burp track tape somewhere. I had that problem. So anyways,
Earth Bay.
Yeah, Howard was like, he kept whispering next to me, just stop singing. Just tell the story. Just say the words. Just say the lyric. And finally, you know, practically in tears, I would look to him just begging him. I'd turn my face from the booth so Ron and John, our directors, couldn't see me. I'd look at him, I'd say, would you please just give me the line reading? Just sing it to me. If you sing it to me, then I can copy you and we're going to get through this because I'm losing my mind, you know, after 7 hours. So there's no way there'd be no Ariel, you know, I mean, it's all Howard. I know that sounds funny when I say that, but you know, people say, oh, I love Ariel. And, I'm like, then you love Howard because Ariel's that's who Howard is Ariel and every single thing. So once we got through that, because I think he felt badly about directing me or, you know, being bossy. I'm like, you're not being bossy. I'm begging you to do this for me. I need your help because I don't know what the heck I'm doing. And finally, once we got past that, and then it was like smooth sailing, you know, except for some technical issues or whatever, but that wasn't on me. And I stopped saying I'm sorry because he's like, you have got to stop saying you're sorry because you deserve to be here. You can do this. I know you can do this. I just worked with you for all those years on Smile. I can get this out of you. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to just completely let go and trust you. And that's what I did. And as soon as I let go and trust, then it was there. Then she was like coming out, you know?
Talk about you can do this. I had lunch with Howard. We were about to do Little Mermaid. And he said, you should score it. You should do the underscore for the movie. I said, I've never done it before. I don't know how. He said, you're going to do it. And so, okay. And it's because he insisted that I did it. And that obviously changed my life in a huge way. Because I learned on Little Mermaid. I didn't know what I was doing. But I took on that job because he said, I need you to do it. You got to do it. And you can do it.
So. The only time I ever heard Howard say he couldn't do something was Jeffrey Katzenberg, who's a brilliant executive that we all worked with, loved the Beauty and the Beast ballad. And he said, I need another verse. We just need another verse. And Howard said, I can't. And he said, I've used all the rhyming words I can use because all that's left is, that rhymes with beast is deceased, priest, and yeast. And he was like, I can't use those. So it is what it is.
I know. Also, you don't want to, you don't want to stretch it out long. I mean, so many things I love about Jeffrey Katzenberg, but I would not, he's not the person I would turn to perfect a ballad. As he wanted to cut part of your world, apparently wanted to totally expand Beauty and the Beast. So with all due respect, Jeffrey.
Yeah, I'm glad no one listened to Jeffrey about Part of Your World, because what the heck would I be doing the last 30 years? I'd be out of a job, so.
So, Alan, at the Expo a few years ago, you did obviously a fantastic concert of your music, and you included Sheridan Square. It was so beautiful and I think unfamiliar to a lot of people in that audience. What made you choose to perform it?
It has a huge impact on listeners. I included in one concert, my whole new world of Alan Menken thing, and I put it in there just as an example of Howard's in my early. There was a period we were writing many individual songs together. That was one of them. So-called Daughter of God and Burning Bush and and we were writing in these individual numbers. But this one was very heartfelt about the AIDS crisis. And people just so respond to it. And so, I took a chance initially putting it in the concert. When I got the response that was so huge, it became just something I regularly include. I thought you could also point out, at a D23 concert, Marvin Hamlisch had just passed away, and I thought I want to do Disneyland. There I am at Disneyland, and it was a beautiful, beautiful song, and I put Howard's lyric in front of me so I could rehearse it, my performance of that, and it was the first time in 22 years that I sat in front of a new, for me, Howard Ashman lyric, and it emotionally just blindsided me. The power of what comes off the page and the life that comes off of it, I was just it was just that visceral experience was incredible, just working in front of a Howard Ashman lyric in general. But anyway, yes, Sheraton Square is very emotional and very positive, you know, despite all the grief. It's not an angry song. It's really, we're gonna try to hang in there, or we'll all go down together. Whatever. He really was grappling with understanding what this was and what his relationship was to this. I remember we were in the studio one night doing a mix, and we were mixing, so therefore the control room, and outside was the sound stage, which was basically dark, and Howard was tired, and he went out to the dark sound stage, and you get those pads that you put on pianos and on the instruments, and he laid a bunch of them on the ground, and he just lay down. And I came out there and we were talking about, you know, what can you do? What are the treatments one could do? And there was something, I think it was called Feldenkrais or something, where you, some sort of a mindset thing or an emotional thing. He said, stop. I don't want to act as if this is something I brought on myself or that I will get rid of, you know, by some other method. This is like it's my fault or my responsibility. And he wouldn't go there. Anyway, it's a flood of these memories.
Wow. Well, we usually end our shows asking about a favorite Disney memory, but we thought for this show, we'd ask for everyone's favorite Howard lyric.
I'll start. So I refuse to give a favorite Howard lyric, but one thing that I find always... that always amuses me is in God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, one of my favorite lines is the very end, which is, let them be rose waters, my sons and my daughters, go forth, be fruitful and multiply. but he rhymed Rose Waters and My Sons and My Daughters, as he does when Ariel sings.
What would I give if I could live out of these waters?
Waters, right. that you're on land, they understand that you don't reprimand your daughters. There's a line in there that rhymes waters and daughters.
I'm going to pick two lines from Gaston. The first one is, he's especially good at expectorating. The other one is, he uses antlers in all his decorating.
Yes. You took that one. I was going to pick that one.
The rest of these decorating. Covered with hair.
No, I know. I love that one too. Oh my gosh.
I also love that. Can I just point out that Howard didn't, one of the reasons that you all remember one of the reasons his Disney lyrics is so wonderful, he did not condescend. He never condescended. He never wrote down to kids that kids were going to read this. He wrote a good lyric and let the kids pull up to him. So more than one child, of course they got it from the animation, but more than one child looked up expectorating to find out what that meant.
And I love the fact too that he actually utilizes Shakespearean days too with screw your courage to the sticking place.
Man, we all ran home that night and like were filing through all the books and looked.
My mom Shakespeare, so I had no choice but to love Shakespeare or enjoy my time with my mom. You know, my favorite was Barely Even Friends, Then Somebody Bends Unexpectedly. And actually, my final memory of Howard, Alan, I was at your house learning the title song because Angela didn't want to do the press and sing it on TV. She just didn't want to.
Oh, right.
So she suggested that I sing it. Remember, I learned the song from you at your house, at your piano, and you said, we got to call Howard. He would love to hear you sing this. And so we did, and actually I sang it to him over the phone, and he said, beautiful, Paige, beautiful. I said, any notes? No, beautiful, Paige. And I was like, no notes from Howard? And it was like crazy. But that was the last time I actually talked to him.
Wow.
When he said beautiful, Paige, it's just like, wow.
It's, you know, the lyric that we found to go at the end of the movie, that was a cut lyric from Beauty and the Beast. Winter turns to spring, famine turns to feast. Nature points the way, nothing left to say, Beauty and the Beast. It's so beautiful in that context. And it's so, the experience of bringing lost lyrics of Howard's back into the light again is so intense. It's just so intense. You know, the moment I had when we re-released the Aladdin movie and we actually recorded, we had the American, what's his name? We had a recording of Proud of Your Boy. And for the first time, an orchestra played Proud of Your Boy.
Aikens, I think.
Play Aiken, yeah. And again, the emotion of just the lyric coming to the light. It's every word he wrote is precious. I'm sorry. Even the worst he treats me.
No.
No, Alan, no.
Can I change the subject and change my answer?
Go ahead. Please, okay. You do it.
Yeah, simply that actually my favorite lyric, one of my favorite lyrics, is not exactly a Disney lyric, but it's about Disney, which is a song from Smile and Disneyland, Take Me There to Disneyland. Maybe it's all fake. That's a chance I'll take. It's perfectly okay. Yes. I love that.
I love that. That's exactly a beautiful lyric. In fact, when you said that, Sarah, my lyrics are from Disneyland. That maybe it's all fake, but I also especially love the bridge. Oh, I know you're gonna say the trees are paper mache, it's made with mirrors, the magic there. Each little bird's full of springs, you press a button, it sings, recorded music in the air. There's only plywood and paste, go on, say it. I'll turn around and tell you, I don't care. And I absolutely love that bridge because you got that whole facade going on the outside. And there's that little child, you know, burning inside from him that just says, it doesn't matter.
I don't care.
I don't care because to me, it's real. I'm going to, you know, take me there. I promise I'm going to get there, and I don't care.
He has her saying it twice. I don't care. I don't
care. And he follows it up with, I will, and you think it's going to be a different word, I will live in Disneyland. Yeah, I will live there. Oh, it was just such a breathtaking, and of course, I'm you know, absolutely huge fan of story songs. But Disneyland, even though I only got to sing it for a few short weeks, and I still do it in concert all the time, what a story, what a journey that song takes you on from beginning to end. And I can always hear I can hear Howard in my ear when I sing that. Don't sing that too much. Don't sing. Speak that part right there. Just maybe hit a note, but not a perfect note. Don't make it perfect. Don't get it on a perfect pitch. And I can hear him when I sing that song. Yeah.
Did the same thing with Angela Lansbury, who was happy to take his direction. But Alan, do you remember when Angela got the first audio tape of the Beauty and the Beast ballad?
Of course.
You have to tell that story because it's precious.
Well, yeah. We recorded Beauty and the Beast, and I did my Tale as Old as Time, True as It Can Be. And we also had one where Howard did Tale as Old as Time, True as It Can Be. So we want Angela to play the part. And they said, Angela said she doesn't think it's for her. I said, what? She said, well, we sent her the song and she didn't really feel it was, you know, her style of a song to sing. She felt she could do that. I said, which demo did you send her? Oh, we sent her yours. I said, no. Send her Howard's demo. She got Howard's demo instantly. Ah, yes, I'll do it.
And she did, it's Jody, it's what you said. She's an actress who can sing, but it's, you know, hit the melody once in a while and more than anything, be your character. You know, and you said it so beautifully in the film. It's like part of your world is a monologue set to music. And I love that line because I just figured, wow, that's about narrative storytelling and songs. And but that's what everybody appreciates.
I can't take credit for that. That's what Howard told me in the studio.
Oh, how funny.
Stop singing. It's a monologue that happens to have some pitch to it. Just like when we'd say, I know the mountains refaced. It's only plywood and paste. He's like, stop singing that. Just tell us the story, and there's going to be some pitch in there. There's going to be some notes. They won't be perfect, but they're going to be perfect for the story and for the song.
Wow, that's so beautiful.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to set the record straight that was Howard that said that.
It makes sense.
Yeah, and watching and hearing Angela Lansbury sing Beauty and the Beast, the day that we did it in the studio with full orchestra, I mean, it was an amazing day, and she'd been up all night because she'd missed her flight, and was exhausted, had no sleep. And Don, I think you said, Angela, go home, we'll do it tomorrow. And she said, no, I'll give it my best shot. And she got in front of the microphone, and we have like a chorus full of Broadway stars, 100-piece orchestra live, everybody's sitting there. She gets up to sing the song. She sings Beauty and the Beast in one take and not a dry eye in the house. I mean, people were so choked up. It was just, talk about a masterclass. That was like a masterclass.
Yeah. And she's a Howard fan. I talked to her a couple of weeks ago, and you know, she'd be the first to say that Howard really, you know, gave her all his gifts of direction and lyrics and those things. And that's a amazing tribute.
Yeah,
one of my favorite moments and I was lucky enough to be there when Jerry Orbach and Angela are there, and Orbach especially, Howard's like listening, Alan's listening, everybody, and Orbach is like. Time of his life. I love that moment.
Yeah, they are so happy, you know. Yeah. And Alan and Howard are like intense and making sure it works, which is great. And the actors are just like, I can't believe I'm here. This is amazing.
We're having so much fun. Yeah, it's cool.
Well, we felt there's a lot of responsibility for two, you know, off Broadway kids here.
Yeah.
You know, we had to grow up very fast.
Yep.
Thank you so much for joining us. This was beyond. The movie is fantastic. So congratulations, Dawn, and all of you being able to tell our story so beautifully.
Wonderful to see you all.
Thank you. Such a treat. Thank you all.
Thank you
for joining us. Great time seeing
everyone.
Good to see you guys.
All of you guys.
Good seeing you all.
Guys, so great to see you.
Adios.